All right. Welcome everyone, to the VC HTTP API call, May 13th, 2021. Just as a reminder to everyone, we've got, this is an IPR protected call, meaning that, if you, are not a member of the CCG and haven't agreed to the IPR agreement, please refrain from, saying anything of, anything substantive, either technically or from a use case perspective, things of that nature. Joining is easy. It's free. Please do so if you haven't already joined. We manage the discussion through a queue. If you want to put yourself on the queue, please type Q plus in the chat window, Q minus to take yourself off, and we will go, ideally in the order of, people, queuing. Our agenda for today, was sent out a bit ago, but we're basically going to cover some pull requests that are open on the, repository, based on some, resolutions that were made, last week. We will then move on to the use cases that, people have, submitted for consideration. That's it. So that's the proposed agenda. Are there any additions or changes to the proposed agenda for today? Okay. So before we start, we're going to need a scribe. Volunteer for scribe, please.
I can scribe. This is Marcus.
Thank you very much, Marcus. Much appreciated. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Marcus. Okay. Like I mentioned, the agenda today is, pull requests, first, and then we're going to talk through, some use cases. And, luckily we've got quite a number of use cases, being added. So we'd like to go through them. Okay, last check. Any updates or changes to the agenda? Anyone want to discuss anything in addition to what was mentioned? Okay. In that case, let's go ahead and move on to the first item here, which are, pull requests. So, review of pull requests. Here are the pull requests on the VC HTTP API. We have two of them. Both of them are, attempting to put the resolutions that have been, that we took last week into a place along with some previous resolutions. The first one is one that Marcus has, put in here. Marcus, this is 128. Marcus, would you like to, go over that? I'll scribe for you while you kind of give a overview of the PR. And you're muted, as well.
Yes. So that one proposes to split up the OpenAPI specification file into three separate OpenAPI specification files plus a few additional ones. The idea being to separate issuer related, verifier related and holder related APIs into different files, simply to make it easier to manage the different areas of functionality and just restructure those three different functions because the file has been getting larger and larger, and it's and with the addition of the potential holder APIs, it's become even more complex. So the idea was to split this up into three separate areas, and in addition to that, there are also some shared components. So thing, for example, schemas like verifiable credential, verifiable presentation, those are needed, for example, by an issuer and a verifier. So it makes sense to split those out as well to make everything a bit more modular. I think this has had quite a bit of support. I think there was a resolution for that. So the PR is to put that into practice.
Finishing up scribing. Yes. So, great. Thank you very much, Marcus, for the PR. I agree with you. And there's a lot of support, that I see in, the chat. Mike's approved the PR, or he's approved the PR. And it looks like, I mean, it's a good, change. So, the suggestion here, this was raised 25 days ago. We have a proposal in that's supportive of it. The suggestion is to merge it immediately. It's been open long enough and we have a proposal for it. So that'll be done, after this call. Mike, you're on the queue.
Yeah. I just wanted to call out a big thanks to Marcus, for this work because it's a huge building block, which then lets us issue other PRs on top of this cleanly to pull things together for documentation purposes, as well as to make future PRs against segments of functionality much more cleanly defined without, you know, changing master files and stuff like that. So just a big thank you.
Plus one to that. I've got a question, for you, Marcus. It's really anyway, Ori might know this. The YAML files are really helpful, in just being very, very, concise about, what the inputs, to these endpoints are. Ideally, we would figure out some way to process the YAML files as inputs and inject them into the respec document. I think there are tools out there that generate HTML, but all the tools kind of create broken respec. It just doesn't work really nicely with respec. Ori, I saw that you had pulled something in. What are the thoughts around pulling these YAML files in as bits and pieces in the respec document? Has anyone done any work on getting that working? Adrian, you're on the queue.
So, I think it's worth putting in the minutes that I was very much a holdout from this decision process. I can try to the resolution is the resolution, the PR is the PR, we're going to deal with it going forward. But I want to put in the minutes the issue that I hope we're all aware of, or a very clear statement of the issue that I hope. As a self-sovereign holder or resource owner or whatever you want to call me, I'm the subject. When I go to the issuer, I should have a choice of either getting a verifiable credential from them or getting a capability from them. Either way, I'm getting a document that they signed and that I can do whatever I want with. And if we are, by doing this process, we are doing something that prevents me from requesting a capability to get the VC rather than the VC itself, then this is going to have major repercussions going down the line. If the nature of the PR and what's being pulled in is such that, we could do both of those under HTTP, then let's move on and we'll just have this in the minutes.
Go ahead, Mike. You're next on the queue.
Yeah, I was...
I'm sorry. Just a quick interrupt. Adrian, I tried, since you said it was important to get it in the minutes, I tried to scribe it, but if you want anything added or fixed, maybe you could type it yourself just to make sure that we're scribing what you wanted to have recorded. Right, sorry, Mike, go ahead. I see.
Nope, all good. And it appears we lost Adrian, so hopefully he reconnects. I was just going to state in terms of pulling respec in, Ori actually linked a good example in the chat, of doing this. There's actually two things, in place. One is from the actual presentation back for interactive, OpenAPI documentation. Those YAML files can actually be merged into a single master YAML file. And properly sectioned by their function group and presented back out. We have examples of that on Open Food Trust, more than willing to pull that code in since it's already Apache 2 over here. So once this is merged, I can do that. And then that allows for the trick that Ori linked to then very cleanly pull this, either sectionally or otherwise as a whole into the respec as well. So.
Got it. Thanks, Mike. That'll be helpful. My concern is the details here. When you pull big chunks of YAML into the respec file, it makes it, difficult to.
Yes. It can be nasty if not done right. So.
Yeah. So my hope was that we could, do some kind of, pre-pop processing to a JSON structure and then, write some tiny respec extensions to then dive into that JSON structure and construct something that allows us to kind of break the API and the inputs and the outputs up and put it into prose and ensure that we keep both the YAML and the respec file in sync. The last thing we want to do is document it in two different places.
Exactly. We want that to go, unidirectional rather than allow stuff to diverge. And the other option is it's easy enough to stick with either YAML or JSON. Sometimes there are benefits to using JSON to define these APIs, so that might be something worth looking at in a future issue. For right now, it's not being an issue, but if I run into something there, I might open an issue or a PR on that.
Plus one sounds great. I put myself on the queue. Adrian, are you back?
Yes, sorry, I got disconnected.
Right, so I put myself on the queue to try and address your concern. There were two things that you outlined. The first one was you want to be able to get a VC back from the issuer API, and that is certainly something that the API supports today. And as we covered on the CCG call, you, the caller, can be an organization, or you can be an individual that is either hooked up to an infrastructure that you pay for, or you can be an individual that is hooked up to your own infrastructure, meaning that you have full sovereignty over every aspect of the issuer and verifier HTTP API. So from a sovereignty perspective, absolutely, you can do all of those things with the current design.
Full sovereignty. In my book is when I get to delegate what happens relative to the issuer. That's full sovereignty.
Okay. Hold on. I'm getting there. Yeah. I'm getting there, Adrian. Okay. Just I'm trying to address your first thing. The first thing is it is supported, in the API. I note that you have a different definition for full sovereignty than I do, but we'll get to that. So currently, you can have full control over this entire infrastructure that we're talking about, VCHTTP API, you can run all of it. So from that lens of sovereignty, that's there. Okay, so now let's talk about delegation. Delegation is a part of the whole authorization framework, and we haven't yet gotten to that discussion. My expectation is that there are going to be companies that support delegation to the API, and they're going to do that. One potential way of doing that is through GNAP. Another way of doing that is through ZCAPs, and my expectation is that we're going to allow that to happen through the API. Now, it may not be a first-class citizen in the spec, but through an extension, it will be possible. So my hope is that that part of it will address your second concern. So I just want to make sure that
on the queue.
Sure. I just want to make sure that, we are very clear that, you know, those things, to discuss those things are absolutely in scope. And it sounds to me like most of it is already, you know, there are people already working on it. That's it. You're up, Adrian.
Okay. I will voice a strong objection, to the idea that this will be done by an extension as opposed to the core. And the reason is the asymmetry of power between the issuers of the world and the subjects, as we like to call them. And as soon as we make this an extension, that asymmetry becomes regulatory capture, if not worse. And so that's all there is to it, not to mention the fact that I feel that since we are at the beginning of this process, we don't have to go down that path. We have everything we need in terms of the charter and what else is going on with respect to protocol work that we could address. You know, I'm channeling Alan Karp here. Let the minutes reflect that. We can address this issue that's both of justice and of good design right now, from the beginning. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Adrian. Ori, you're up.
So, Adrian's already sort of covered some of this. But we have to be careful when we talk about capability systems and this API, because there's sort of two different meanings of the word, the concept of authorization here. And there are today a set of holder APIs that the docs do support, although the tests don't cover them. And they are what I would call internal holder APIs. They, like, you know, for example, help you make a presentation using a web service by putting a signature on it. And that is different than talking to an external party across the trust domain. So there's sort of internal holder APIs and there's external holder APIs. To date, we have only had internal APIs in the spec in any format. And the original pull request, which spawned having regular calls on this, was the first attempt to add any external APIs to the specification. And those external APIs are where things like GNAP and Zcaps are definitely contenders. I'm asserting that the internal APIs are probably not really appropriate for GNAP and Zcaps to sort of be considered, simply because neither of them is sort of finished yet. And it's not about the state of self-sovereignty concerns that Adrian is recognizing. Since you're inside of a trust domain, you are already captured. If your mobile app wallet is talking to your mobile app backend service, those are both owned by the same company. There is no sovereignty in that world. It's just the app infrastructure world, which is different than getting a capability to a credential from a third party and crossing that trust domain. So we should just be careful when we say, oh, GNAP and Zcaps are appropriate for everything, or they're only appropriate for holder APIs that are external facing or, you know, other perspectives.
Great. Thank you, Ori. I put myself on the queue to get us back to PRs. Real quick, again, Marcus's PR is going to go in. The other PR that has been open is one to create the initial structure for the specification based off of the resolution that we made last week. So that is PR 183. I'm going to very briefly share my screen to show what the spec looks like. So that PR would effectively make this spec, would create this spec. It is, for the large part, blank. So the introduction's blank, the example's blank, the design goals are blank, the architecture overview, blank, conformance criteria, blank, in all of the sections, blank. Right. So all the only thing this PR does is just create the spec and says, here's some proposals for what the sections are. Right. Again, that PR has been in for, let's see how long, just 3 days. But since it is taking action on a resolution, the suggestion is that is going to be merged very shortly as well. So that's just a heads up on the PRs that are active. Are there any questions or concerns on the PRs before we move into the main part of the call, which is discussion around use cases? All right, so let's go ahead and start talking about use cases. Here is the use cases document. Let me make sure this is, yeah, that's the use cases document. Juan has cleaned up the landing page, so it's got instructions and pointers to Joe's tutorial on how to write use cases. There's a proposed timeline there, which is great. Juan, would you mind going over what you added there at the beginning and some of the challenges that you've seen so far in the use cases document?
Sure. Thanks. I wanted to put a little bit of a explicit hints to the intended kinds of use cases and to help people put the emphasis on the right part of the use case. So there's also, importantly, do not miss the link to Joe's very long email. You can, if you click through to the Google Doc and use the version, what's it called? Version history, you can see the shorter use case that Manu wrote that Joe was responding to. And then you can look at the longer one Joe wrote from it, sort of following Joe's steps. And I think the first of the two use cases from Manu was a result of that process. So that's a very helpful thing if anyone wants to submit use cases and has enough time to replay that process. I think it can be really helpful. And yeah, the target, what I think is easiest to work with in this case is use cases of the length of Adrian's and Manu's that really emphasize the stakeholders, the real world processes, and the outcomes rather than the specific mechanisms and means and technical steps. Particularly because the API is not the API is specifying a neutral cross-vendor general purpose API. So use cases that don't involve four stakeholders don't really highlight the right part, right? So I think what I would like to try to emphasize in the things done here is, you know, maybe incorporating some of these VC use cases and VC end-to-end flows, and sort of highlighting what is gained from none of the stakeholders having to invent their own bespoke APIs, right? So it's like that I think is just a useful thing to try to emphasize. When you're writing and editing these, and that's what I'm trying to edit for. Maybe Eric and Joe have other things to add. This is a team effort. Oh, and Eric's on the queue.
Yeah, so I think all that was great. One, we're at least, I think, in alignment. I just wanted to speak a little bit to what I added proposed timeline. I don't know if this becomes a proposal today, but would like to get some thoughts if 4 weeks seems like a reasonable amount of time. If we want to make these two different sections, one for gathering and one for distilling, 6 weeks, would like to get some thoughts from the group on that.
So real quick, I think the timeline's great for a first pass, of course, right? I mean, this doesn't mean like you can't add your use cases after, you know, June 10th, but let's try to make it a point to get the major use cases in by June 10th. Like, if you really care about, you know, putting something into this API or getting your use case in there, four weeks seems like plenty of time. I know that at least my experience jumping in and editing use cases, you only need about 15 to 30 minutes to get something down on paper. And so, you know, June 10th for a cutoff for the first set, feels reasonable to me. And then, you know, another 4 weeks for distilling's, great. So plus one for the proposed timeline. And I'd be happy to run a proposal if I think we probably should, just because you always have people that are like, hey, you never said that was going to be the cutoff. So I'm happy to run a proposal, Eric, or if you want to type up the proposal, you know, we should run it.
You can type it up.
Great. Thanks, Eric. Any other suggestions, concerns around the timeline, concerns around how we're gathering use cases? Okay, so let's dive into these. The hope is that we do spend in the time, you know, to June 10th, we spend a little bit of time talking about everybody's use case and give people that have submitted the use cases some feedback so that they can clear things up, clear up concerns, questions that people had. Let's just go in order. I think, Adrian, you wrote up a digital vaccination card one. I've got some questions on it. Why don't we start off with this one? So if you don't mind, introduce the use case, talk, you know, specifically to, you know, how it impacts the HTTP API, you know, any other work you feel like needs to be done, specific parts of the use case that you feel like we really need to focus on, that sort of thing.
So, sure. Briefly, this is designed around, first of all, it is a very much a real world use case that I am involved in various ways. And it's unsettled, I should say. It's still very much up in the air. The use case, points out that the IZI, it points out the sort of asymmetric relationship between the issuer, of the issuer that's in effect doing the vaccination and the person receiving the vaccination that might, for instance, be an undocumented person that, according to good public health practice, wants absolutely to be sure that there is no central registry of Ali, which you'll notice I picked a name that's unisex, that they got a service, you know, because they might then be denied immigrant status under at least some administrations. So that's one aspect of this use case. The second aspect of it is how the verifiable credential, this privacy-preserving verifiable credential, is delivered to Ali, and that is her choice. In other words, as part of the request, Ali is basically saying, I'm going to take a photograph of it, or I'm going to give you an email address or a text message. Or I might use Chappie if I am using a web browser. But again, from the self-sovereignty perspective, as far as the spec is concerned, all four of those are equally in scope. And the issuer, unless they have some really, really good reason, which in this case, because it's a public health use case, they absolutely do not, the issuer doesn't get to discriminate as to which one of those four ways of receiving the credential Ali uses. Now, mind you, this is not the same issue that I mentioned earlier today about capabilities. Capabilities is not part of this use case. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Any questions or comments about this use case from anyone in the group? I've got one. So Adrian, the one thing that, well, the thing, so it's a good use case, right? I mean, it's very clear what the value here is and what's being done. I couldn't draw a straight line from the use case to the HTTP API though. It was like this use case could just as easily live in the verifiable credentials use cases, document as it could this one. What specifically about this use case makes it a verifiable credential HTTP API use case?
Both the form that Alice is filling out and the way that the credential is delivered, they are both HTTP if that's the way Alice wants them to be. Right? So nowhere... So that's why it's HTTP. She doesn't have to have a smartphone with a camera to do this, or an email address, or share her text with the vaccinator. She should be able to do this entirely over HTTP.
All right, thanks. Ori, you're up next.
Yeah, so I think that is the connection here. And in my mind, the thing that's tricky about the way this use case is documented is there's some assertions about the data model that have to do with the cross trust domain relationship between the issuer and the holder. So I think specific parts of the API that this use case is about is not actually about the issuance API. It's about the presentation exchange hypothetical versions of the API that would support that. And I think if we're being honest about what verifiable credentials are, this is in no way related to like the issuance APIs, in the sense that the issuance APIs just produce credentials of a given type. They're not a, and those APIs today are assumed to be internal, same trust domain. So pulling apart, you know, the part of this use case that covers the VCHTTP API, as I heard it, was a holder can see issuers who provide credentials that meet a certain set of privacy guarantees, and a holder can request those credentials and can receive them in their wallet. And that system might in turn rely on internal issuance APIs that this API spec describes.
Thanks, Ori. I put myself on the queue to ask a question of Adrian. So the HTTP form thing throws me a bit, because HTTP forms are like URL encoded forms and submitted over HTTP, but that thing really has nothing to do with the VCHTTP API. As far as we know and have defined it today. So the first thing feels like it's not a VCHTTP API thing. The second thing might be, but there's not enough data there for at least me to understand, like, in what form is this thing being returned? Like, what specific call on the VCHTTP API, returns this thing to, Ali, right? So that's what I'm struggling with. If we could anchor that somewhere, like, Ali's hitting, you know, some kind of pickup location that I'm expecting the HTTP API to have. That might be one thing. Anyway, there's a question there. Mike, you're next.
I'm not sure if I should or shouldn't pull myself from the queue, because I think you basically said my concern, which is I'm just not seeing, just because the user's interaction is over HTTPS, over the web, that does not imply to me that that has anything necessarily to do with VC-HTTP API. That service that they hit may in turn call VC-HTTP API, but I'm just not seeing that. Like, it's a totally valid use case. Like, I don't want to, you know, degrade from that. It's just, I'm not sure why it is, I'm not sure what is novel about it for, as a use case for VC-HTTP API itself, except for maybe some of the holder across boundary stuff that Ori mentioned.
Go ahead, Adrian.
So, I put in the spoiler alert in the chat. My perspective here is in terms of what in our world we're calling presentation requests, and in GNAP we call requests. In other words, the subject here, Ali, is making a request from the issuer. And embedded in that request is all sorts of stuff. And this is exactly why I say that authorization and delegation are first-class citizens in what we're doing here. Because, for instance, what is going on in our conversations in the credential, where we, I guess it's credential handling work group, which I don't follow very much, it looks to me exactly like what happens at the core of GNAP, where all GNAP really cares about is how do you phrase a request. Fundamentally, somebody shows up to an authorization server as a sort of issuer role, if you would, to get something from the authorization server, which will be of some use to them, whether it's an access token or a verifiable credential or a capability is really irrelevant to GNAP. And the whole world starts and ends like that, because GNAP has gone and factored out the resource server into a separate document. It's still part of the protocol, of course, but it is a separate document, just like I'm trying to get us here to deal with separate documents. So I hope that's clear enough. A request is a request as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that the request comes in through a form, you're right, it's a little bit pedantic of me. I could have, done it as a post or something else. So I do agree with you that it's a stretch. But the point that I'm making is that it is a request and the result is an issuance of a capability or a token of some sort. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Adrian. Ori, you're up.
Yeah. So Adrian's use case is the same use case the traceability API folks have. And just to restate it, since he's already stated it once, but he added stuff that might have confused people or they might have gotten lost. This is a proposal that the VC-HTTP API should allow for a holder to request a presentation and receive a presentation, right? This is about presentation exchange. So this is verifiable presentations moving across a trust boundary between one party and another party. And there were proposals for this to be included in the VC-HTTP API, and there was a pull request. It sat open. People were like, we need use cases. Here we are. Here's the use case QED. So this is the same use case the traceability API folks have. Now, I will note that Adrian's taking us sort of into rough territory when he says that I might get something other than a VC back, because that's not a use case the traceability API folks have. Like, this API is about getting VCs and VPs to work either in an internal context or in a cross-trust domain context. And we've already had a resolution to expand this work item to include cross-trust domain context. This use case is the same cross-trust domain context use case that the traceability API folks have. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Ori. I was going to try and restate Adrian's use case, to make sure I understand him. That also helps Ori. So the flow here, and what would really help here is just like a flow diagram. The idea here is, I think Ali says, I would like to start some kind of presentation flow with you, right? And maybe I even say, I want a digital vaccination card. And they contact the issuer, and the issuer maybe responds back with, well, if you want that, then you have to give me, I don't know, your first name, your last name, and some kind of PIN code that somebody else gave you. And maybe, and I know this is not the traceability use case, Ori, and maybe what Ali does then is responds back with, you know, a verifiable credential saying, here you go, here's my first name, last name, and the PIN code, it's self-issued. Like, it doesn't have to be issued from anybody else, it's just self-issued. And then the issuer goes, okay, well, that matches a first name, last name, and PIN code that I have on file, and so I'm going to respond back with a verifiable credential, which is your digital vaccination card, right? And I think if we do it that way, that meets all of Adrian's requirements that he's outlined here, and at least makes it clear one way that that use case is tied to the VC HTTP API. Now, clearly, that is not an HTML form, and it's not, you know, put through an HTML form on a website, but that, to me, at least ties in the VC HTTP API. The other thing I want to point out is that that is one of the next use cases that we do have a flow diagram for. So I'd like to try and get to that one before we end the call. All right, who's up next? Juan, you're up.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that I think I think what everyone's asking for is just to to shift the proportions of this use case so it emphasizes less the VC part and more the API part, and just emphasizes the mechanics that Ori brought out about using a VP to share a VC over a trust boundary and to leave open options about what happens at certain places. So I think I get the sense, Adrian, that it's almost like a use case you want to make sure is possible over standard APIs, and you have certain architectures that you want to make sure are not blocked by this general purpose API's way of handling things. But I think it just in terms of the order of operations, I think a swim lane as early as possible would help other people edit with you rather than just asking you to just start over and write something totally different with the same ingredients. So please, if you bring a swim lane to next week or to a, I don't know, meeting with any of us that are trying to help edit the use cases, that would help a lot. And I put a link in the chat for how I make swim lanes quickly. Thanks. That's all.
Thanks, Juan. Adrian?
So I use a lot of swim lanes. I've probably drowned you all in swim lanes over the years. But here's the thing. I think Ori put his finger on it. And that is, I forget which work group he referred to, but if the interaction between Ali and the issuer is going to result in a presentation, then that presentation, that verifiable presentation, might as well go directly from the issuer to the verifier, because that's how we use presentation in this world, right? We understand presentation to be the self-sovereign's ability to determine what goes into the thing that the verifier is going to get. And whether that's done through capabilities and attenuation of capabilities, or whether it's done by having the thing go through a holder and PIN codes, is absolutely irrelevant to what we're talking about here. So I will be happy to provide swim lanes, but it's not going to change anything about this use case. And the reason is exactly what Ori said. Thank you.
All right. I was going to move us on, but I think the people are putting themselves on the queue to respond to what you just said, Adrian. So I'm going to take myself off. I do want 10 minutes left. I want to get to at least one other use case. Joe, you're next.
Yeah. Am I live?
Yes.
Okay. Looks like I am. So I think, Adrian, this, your perspective has a pretty big divergence from the workflow that I understand to enable identity assurance with VCs and consent with VCs. So I was surprised to hear you talk about the issuer directly giving anything to a verifier for two reasons. One is it's the proof of control at the two points of the process that ensures that the current holder is in fact the subject of the VC. And if you go directly, you won't have that loop. And second is if it's direct, then how do you ensure the consent of the person who's the subject of the VC? So that's why the holder is in the loop. So it seems surprising, given the use cases I know you care about, that you would suggest that we take the individual out of the loop. That's all.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Joe is next, followed by Joe. I'm guessing Joe, you win.
I had different reminders in there.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I think we got them all.
Okay, all right, Adrian, you're up.
It's easy, Joe. If you read the use case, it references the fact that the verifiable credential includes the hash of Alice's quantized face. And so there's absolutely, and this is the use case I wrote up in the Harvard Law School blog about 2 weeks ago, a week ago. And so there's absolutely no doubt on the part of the both the issuer and the verifier that they're talking about Ali, and that is already in the use case. So, but otherwise you'd be right. Thank you.
All right. I want to try to get us to at least one more use case. We covered the digital permanent resident card on the last call. I added one. This is the one that I thought was close to yours, Adrian, but you're saying it's not. But there's a flow diagram here about starting a flow and getting a request for a presentation back and then presenting and then getting VCs back. I'm going to skip over this one, though. So for those of you that didn't know, there is a new like presentation-based flow here. I believe, Ori, you added something down here. Holder presents credentials to verifier. Would you mind, is this the one that you wanted to go over, Ori? Is this the one you said it's the same exact one for traceability folks?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So this is painfully simple, actually. What we're talking about here are these three roles that individuals can play, you know, multiple roles in different situations, right? They're the classic roles described in the W3C spec. So they're issuer, holder, and verifier. In order for an issuer to give a credential about a subject to a subject, one of the flows that this API might support would be a presentation of credentials about a subject to a holder, which happened to be that subject. And so that's the issuer presents credentials to holder flow. And that's, I'm starting with that one because typically when you tell this story, it starts with an issuer giving credentials to a holder of some kind, because then later the holder is going to present those to a verifier. So instead of making these use cases so vertical specific so as to trigger everybody about, you know, whether you care about healthcare or vets or traceability or dogs or whatever, I wrote these use cases in terms of things that you wish the VC data model had shipped a protocol that supported, right? Because it's a data model spec. It doesn't have any way to actually use the data model in any concrete way. You need these things. You need a way to get a credential from an issuer to a holder, to get a credential in a presentation from a holder to a verifier. That's what these two APIs do. So they're both cross trust domain flows. One of them is from an issuer to a holder. That's across the trust domain most of the time. And then one's from the holder to the verifier, and that's across the trust domain most of the time. There's a couple points in here that sort of highlight one of the things that Adrian has been mentioning, which is subject bindings in credentials and privacy implications. And sometimes we refer to that as the subject is holder / subject is not holder problem. And there's a whole section of the VC data model spec that talks about this. And you got to be careful with it because it's a place where privacy stuff can go wrong. And so one of the stories that I added here, which kind of helps us think about this, is imagine holding credentials about your dog, right? So I go to the vet. The vet's the issuer. I get my dog vaccinated for rabies, you know, or for whatever. And I get a credential from the vet where the subject is my dog, but I'm holding it. And then later when I try and get on an airplane with my dog, the airplane staff, they're a verifier. And I could be proving that I'm holding a credential that says that my dog is vaccinated. Or I could be holding a credential that says that I'm vaccinated. Maybe we're okay with some of the privacy implications of like, you know, globally unique identifier that's constantly broadcasting on RFID spectrum for animals, but not so much for humans, right? So these are, it's the same exact story, but whether the credential is about a human subject or not, there is a presentation from someone who's holding it to a verifier. And these API proposals are for both sides of that coin. And they're both what we would call external facing holder APIs.
Great. Thanks, Ori. Adrian, you're up.
So simply put, to Ori's use case, there are three cross-domain relationships that we talk about in this work group. The issuer to holder, the holder to verifier, and the issuer to verifier. And this is why I've been plus-one-ing everything Ori has said, is because it is all about this externalization. It's you. I look at the world just like I think we all do in terms of what's being requested and what is being returned as a result of the request. And the fact that I choose to associate that with GNAP and with delegation issues doesn't change the fact that we've invented this vocabulary around presentations and whatnot. But they are all about exactly what Ori is talking about. And so just to put a very clear example here, one of the things that came up in one of my lists related to these vaccine credentials today is the difference in terms of privacy of having somebody also check your passport when they see your vaccination card or not, right? So in other words, the use case that I'm proposing, Ali doesn't need to have a passport at all, and she therefore doesn't need to be asked for a passport. Whereas in the example of the vaccination credential versus the dog, the presumption is that Ali is presenting a passport that is matched against the name and date of birth that happens to be on the signed credential. So, yes, this is real life, and I just want to keep pointing out that we don't get to pick and choose in this group two out of the three external trust relationships. There are always three out of the three trust relationships, and we just need to deal with it.
Noting we've got 2 minutes left, I think that's the call. I was going to call that third one out, Adrian. I think it's a very dangerous area. And I think there've been a couple, you know, Ori's, I think I share Ori's concern and Joe's concern about talking about direct issuer to verifier. There are use cases where that can be valid. But we have to be very careful about normalizing, that it's dangerous on many, many levels, and there are better ways to do it. Just real quick on next steps, and then I'll get to you, Ori. Next steps, please add use cases to this document. We unfortunately, I failed, Eric, to get that proposal in. How about this? Ori, would you mind us to Would you mind if we did that proposal real quick, just to get that on the
board? Yeah, run the proposal.
Okay, I'm trying to find. Do you have it handy, Eric? Could you just?
Yep, just reposted it.
Great. All right. Plus one, minus one, the proposal. It's the timeline that was proposed earlier. All right. Looks like that passed. Over to you, Ori, for the final word.
I think we should attack this challenge that Adrian has put forward directly. So I agree with everything he said. We're considering these relationships between holders and issuers and verifiers, and you can draw an arrow between issuers and verifiers. So it sounds like the next step would be to go to the VC data model and read everything about that issuer to verifier section of that spec, because this work group work item is about that spec. So we would need to go review issuer to verifier and see some concrete spec language proposals that would say, this is a thing that we read about and we think should be preserved, or this is a thing we read about and it says never do this, and why would we preserve it, right? That seems to be the two sides of this coin. And I think we're ready to have that battle out on GitHub issues and in spec text.
Great. Thank you, Ori. And with that, thank you a ton to Marcus for scribing. We'll see everyone here next week at the same time. I apologize. I have not sent that doodle poll out. I will do that. Thanks, everyone. Ciao.